And a continuing big story is the aviation security in this country and around the world, all as a fallout from the incident 10 days ago on Christmas Day with Umar Farouk Abdulmanhalab, the guy who flew from Lagos, Nigeria through Amsterdam to Detroit and attempted to blow up that plane with that mixture of glycol and PETN explosive powder in his underwear that day. As you've been hearing, the international airport security business has been kind of jumping on board the body scanner bandwagon. The United States has ordered up 150 of them to be distributed to airports across the country from SeaTac on outwards. There are new rules on international travel, what you have to do when you go through airports coming to the United States, what you can carry on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Those have been changing on an almost daily basis. Here to talk about all of this is Bruce Schneier, who is an airport security expert and has written a terrific book, actually written a couple of terrific books, the most recent Schneier on Security. Bruce, welcome to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Hey, thanks.
Nice to have you on here. What do you think of all this noise about body scanners in particular? Let's start with that.
Well, I always worry about security measures that protect against the specifics of the plot and not the broad threat. This is very human. It's very natural. I mean, something happened and we're scared of what happened, so we're looking for security that would stop the thing that happened from happening again. But, you know, as we know, if you stop and actually think about it for a minute, the terrorists chose that plot precisely because we weren't looking for it. And spending our money on the story doesn't make us any safer against the threat in general.
And when you say against the story, you mean that one thing. I have been talking for the last several days here on Cairo about, you know, we're putting all these body scanners in airports thinking, oh, Al-Qaeda couldn't possibly come up with something to get around that. Is it impossible for Al-Qaeda to buy a body scanner and figure out how to get around it?
Oh, I mean, of course it's not. And it's more general. I mean, think of the history of airplane security. We take away guns and bombs, the terrorists use box cutters. We take away box cutters and corkscrews, and they put us explosives in their shoes. We screen shoes, they use liquids. We limit liquids, they stuff a bomb in their underwear. We implement full-body scanners, they're going to do something else, right? This is a stupid game, stop playing. You know, full-body scanners, I thought, would have protected against the threat that happened on Christmas Day. I'm, you know, not a minute ago reading an article on the BBC website where one of the makers of these scanners is saying, wait a second, we probably wouldn't have caught that.
Yep.
I don't know if that's true. I was trying to get more information, you know, when this call started. But, yeah, it's not clear that body scanners would work. Certainly they would help. But even if they would work, I don't want a security measure that forces the bad guys to make a minor change in their tactics or target. Right? If we spend billions on airplane security and the terrorists blow up shopping malls, we haven't gotten any safer.
All right, I'm going to ask you what would make us safer in a second, but I've been reading that same story this morning, not on the BBC website, but on the Independent website, which is a newspaper over in the UK, in which Ben Wallace, a member of Parliament, who used to be involved in a company that was a leading British defense contractor, said that they had done trials on these scanners and found that low-density materials went undetected. It says, quote, tests by scientists and the team at Kinetic, that's the company that makes them, showed the millimeter wave scanners picked up shrapnel and heavy wax and metal, but plastic, chemicals, and liquids were missed. So in other words, these scanners probably would not have picked up what was in Abdulmutallab's underwear on Christmas Day, right?
And that seems to be what the article's saying. And you know, I guess there will be tests and we'll figure this out. It might be too late. There's so much of a public demand for this that even if it's ineffective, we might see them. But you know, whether it's effective or not, to me, misses the point completely. It's magical thinking to believe that we can somehow fix security by fixing the plot. I mean, it makes no more sense than having everybody sit down during the last hour of flight, because that's what happened on Christmas Day, and the terrorists would never think of blowing up their bomb on the first hour of flight.
Or 62 minutes before your touchdown.
Right. I mean, this is very human, because the story is what resonates. That's what we fear. We don't fear the general threat. So we and also there's a belief in our society of perfection, that perfection is possible. And if we fail to achieve it, something must be wrong, something must be broken, someone must be to blame, and something must be fixed. So now we're looking for something to fix. And even if nothing is the right thing to do, it's very hard for a politician to say, I recommend doing nothing.
Right.
Because you have to show concern, you have to fix the problem. So we're going to see a lot of money being spent to fix the problem, which is not going to make us any safer.
This is News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Harris doing the Dave Ross Show and talking with international security expert Bruce Schneier. And tell me what you would do if the specific doesn't work. What would work as a better plan in general?
So we need to take all the money we're spending on these specific movie plots and spend them in ways that doesn't require us to guess what the terrorists will do next time correctly. Right? We spend money on, let's say, the Olympics. If the terrorists attack the Olympics, we've wasted it. Where we get the best bang for our buck is investigation, intelligence, and emergency response. Right? Stuff that doesn't require us to guess. And a good example of this working is the liquid bomber plot. These people were arrested in London in their apartment, and it didn't matter if they were using liquids or solids or gases. It didn't matter if they were attacking airports or crowded movie theaters or stadiums. They were arrested, and the plot was foiled. Right? That's the right way to think. You know, airport security is the last line of defense and is not a very good one. We're not going to be safer by putting more money into airline security. Because, I can't imagine the terrorists saying, wow, they've admitted full body scanners. We should go get a real job now. You know, that doesn't seem plausible to me.
Right.
They're going to do something else. And I want to catch them regardless of what they decide to do. I don't want us to play the guessing game. There are simply too many tactics and too many targets.
So in that regard, it's the human factor, not the technological factor, that will work. It's the going out, getting intelligence, sharing intelligence within our agencies, etc. Is that what you're saying?
It is. And if there was a failure for this Christmas Day plot in security, it wasn't at the airport, right? It was getting him a visa. I mean, it was the fact that the tip from his father didn't go investigated. You know, and we don't know. It's very easy after the fact to connect the dots and figure out the intelligence stuff we should have seen. It's much harder before the fact. And, you know, I hope there will be some investigation into whether there were failures here. But exactly, I mean, that's the correct way to think.
Let me read to you a couple of quotes from John Brennan, who is President Obama's counterterrorism advisor. He was all over the Sunday talk shows yesterday. So here are a couple of things that he said, and then, Bruce, you tell me your response. There is no smoking gun. There was no single piece of intelligence that said this guy is going to get on a plane. Every other day, the system has worked this year. The system is working. It's just not working as well as it needs to constantly. There were a number of streams of information and little snippets from intelligence channels, but there was nothing that brought it all together. In this one instance, the system didn't work. There were human errors. There were lapses. We need to strengthen it. What we need to do as an intelligence community, as a government, is to be able to bring these disparate bits of pieces of information together so we prevent the next Abdulmutallab from getting on board the plane.
So that's certainly true, although there's a large distance between rhetoric and action. So I agree with everything he said. Doing that is often not easy. I mean, we're dealing with a Cold War culture, I mean, still in the intelligence community. And a Cold War culture involves what's called need to know. I mean, things are kept very secret. You don't share them unless you have to. You hold the information close to your vest. It's a lot of interagency rivalry, the NSA, the CIA, the State Department, the FBI. And that really, you know, as weird as it sounds, worked during the Cold War. You know, we're living in a different world. We have an information economy. We have a much more agile, less well-funded, less bureaucratic adversary. And we need to share information by default rather than classify it by default. And that's a huge cultural change. And I'd love it if Obama could help that change along. My guess is going to take a generation of spies to die and be replaced by a younger generation who grew up on Facebook and Google to implement some of these changes. It's harder than you think.
It's not that we want everybody tweeting about the latest thing that they found in the intelligence agencies, but we certainly want more of that interdepartmental information sharing. Does some of that go back to simple turf wars? You know, if I give you this information and you get the guy, I don't get credit.
And then there is some of that. There's less collaboration. And I think we do want them tweeting. We don't want them tweeting in public, but I would love to see, there exists a classified Wikipedia-like system that all the agencies can use. I'd like to see Facebooks and Twitters within the community, not that you and I can see, but that all they can see, so they can share. And they can Twitter, and they can Facebook, and they can do whatever we've learned to do in the information age to share ideas and hunches and, you know, dumb comments. All of that stuff is how you and I build a picture of the world. So, we do need to mirror Twitter in the intelligence community. Right? I mean, you don't have access to it. The terrorists don't have access to it. But everybody in government who needs it at a very broad level should have access to it. And yes, eliminate the turf wars. It isn't you caught the guy versus I caught the guy. It's we caught the guy.
Yep.
And you see this in the real world in collaborative puzzle solving. You know, lots of areas we know how to do this. But it's not the Cold War way of thinking.
Look at all the open source software that has made great strides in what we do online and offline in the last several years. And that was all about, hey, you know what? Here's an idea. Who can make it better? And if we applied that same concept, and maybe you're right, I love the generational thing. Maybe it's a fact that people who are in their 50s and 60s who've been doing this for their entire life look at it as mine, 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 as opposed to people who are in their 20s and 30s who look at it as ours, ours, ours.
Yeah, I think that's true. There's another thing I think we should talk about. I've been hearing a lot about airport security failing, and that's not making sense to me. I mean, there are two points which I think are missing from the debate. One is that airport security, the checkpoints as they exist today, as they existed in the 1970s, forced the bomber, or I guess the bomb builder, to build an inefficient bomb. Right? He was forced to build a bomb that had a piece of plastic explosive, a homebrew ad hoc detonation system. You know, and we're not sure if it seems to be a chemical and it involved mixing something in the laboratory for 20 minutes. I'm still don't have the details. But he didn't have a conventional bomb with a conventional timer that would have gone off reliably. So airport security forced him to design an inefficient bomb that, in the end, didn't explode. And I think we should remember that and not be so quick to fault airport security. The second is that airport security was never designed to detect someone strapping a detonator-less plastic explosive to their body and walking through the magnetometers. Not in this country, not in any country on the planet. This isn't new. This isn't surprising. A few years ago, I interviewed Kip Hawley, the head of the TSA, and I asked him about it. I mean, you know, anybody who's surprised by this tactic simply wasn't paying attention to security. So it's hard to call it a failure when it was never intended. We could argue that airport security should have been designed to catch this, but it never has. It isn't. You know, and that's been true for years and years.
Let's talk about airport security in the last 24 hours, because all of this has been about something 10 days ago, the Christmas flight of Northwest 253. But let's talk about this incident at Newark Airport yesterday, which I'm sure you're familiar with. It backed up air travel for people all across the country and even into early this morning, because the Continental Terminal at Newark Airport had to be shut down when somebody said, I think I saw a guy go in the out. The guy entered through the exit, through a security checkpoint, wasn't stopped. Somebody was picking up a passenger and told an officer about that, and they had to get everybody out of the terminal, and everybody had to be rescreened, and that took hours, and that screwed up basically the entire American air travel system from 5:30 yesterday afternoon until early this morning. Right there, you got to ask yourself, you can put in all the body scanners you want, you can do all the technology you want, but if a guy sitting in a chair there at the exit doesn't see the person coming the other way, you can't do anything.
And this happens once every few months somewhere in the country, maybe twice a year. I mean, this isn't a new story. And, yeah, I mean, perfection is impossible. I mean, so somebody will get through. And actually, because we never found the guy. I don't think we even know if there was somebody. I mean, I know they reviewed videos, and they think they know who it was, but it's possible this was a mistake. The problem is, if you think about it, we have an insecure world and a secure airport area. Once someone breaches that boundary, the only thing you can do, well, you have two choices. One, you can say, probably not a problem, don't worry about it. Or you can evacuate everybody from the terminal. Search the terminal, make sure nobody's hiding in some kitchen or some lavatory somewhere, and then rescreen everybody to get back in. And right, and that's a 6, 8, 12-hour delay. Now, this is because the checkpoints are coarse. Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam tends to have checkpoints at the gate. So if that happens, you know, someone walks through and it isn't checked, only the gate has to be evacuated, mm-hmm. not the whole terminal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a much more expensive solution, right? You know, many more machines, many more screeners, but it is more resilient against this inevitable but rare case of someone not paying attention, falling asleep, just not noticing. We've had examples of somebody just run through a checkpoint, just run right through, and he's lost in the crowd. Now you got to find him.
And now hundreds of people have their day turned upside down. They were already anxious enough about the uncomfortable experience of flying wherever they're going. And now, okay, everybody out. I went through this with my daughter about 2 months after 9/11. We were flying through LaGuardia Airport in New York City going to visit some family. And on the way home, we had to leave the terminal, and we were 3 hours delayed while everybody went back through again. Ridiculous.
Although the alternative, if you think about it, is someone making the call and saying, probably not a problem, let's not worry about it. And you know nobody is going to make that call, because if he's wrong, even if it's an infinitesimal chance, his career is over.
Here's the amazing part of this story, Bruce. They are now saying that they think that the guy who went through there, and they do have surveillance video of him entering through the exit, they think he left the airport about 20 minutes later.
That's funny. And in a sense, right, I mean, that's kind of a clever way to cause terrorism at low cost, right? I mean, you really, but terror is a bad word. It's a really good way to inconvenience a lot of people.
Right.
There's no way around this, because no system is perfect. You know, you want to minimize these. But every time you make it less likely, it's more expense. So let's say I'm going to make this up. We will reduce the incidence of this problem by one half by doubling the number of screeners everywhere. Right. So then if one person's not paying attention, another person is. I mean, I'm just making up these numbers.
Yep.
Now we're going to do the math. Right. You could be charged, again, I'm making this up, $20 more per ticket to make this one half less likely to happen. Do you want to pay it? I probably don't. You know, the odds of it happening are very low. I mean, it does happen a couple times a year, and we all get inconvenienced. But, you know, is it worth the cost to implement the more resilient security to make this breach? And these are the security trade-offs we have to make. You know, nothing comes free.
Last thing I got to ask you, and I'm desperately late on time here, so let me just, this will be the last thing. Whenever something like this happens, people say, well, why don't they just act like El Al? Why don't they do what the Israelis do when they screen people? And I always say, well, do you have any idea how few flights go in and out of Israel? I mean, there are fewer people there than there are here today. Listening to this show, we have more people right now than fly in and out of Israel on a daily basis. Am I right?
And that's exactly the point. The Israeli solution simply doesn't scale to the American passenger system. They have a couple of airports, very few flights. They can take the time. They also have a much more defined adversary, but primarily, you could not do that at anything resembling rational costs on the scale of the American system. It just simply won't work.
Bruce Schneier, author of the book Schneier on Security. You can find him online at schneier.com. That's S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R. It's always a pleasure talking with you, Bruce. Thanks for your expertise this morning.
Hey, thank you.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Dave Ross Show on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.